You're listening to The Truth Podcast from PursueGod.org.
All right, I'm on today with my good friend and retired Brigadier General Ed Pinto Casey. Ed, before we talk about, we're going to be talking a little bit about these episodes that recently aired right here on The Truth Podcast about Israel and the church. I thought, who could I talk about? Like, who could bring some real meat to this conversation? And you were the guy who came up. So first of all, let's just start with your story. Tell us your story real quick, militarily and ministry-wise.
Yeah, so thank you, Brian. It's great to connect again. And I love that, saw one of your podcasts and just was fired up and wanted to talk about it. So it's fun to be able to help out here. But militarily. So, I did 29 years in the Air Force. 18 of those were in the active duty. And then I actually pivoted over to the Air National Guard, which is what brought me to Alabama. I live in Auburn, Alabama, and finished my career in the Air National Guard. 3.5 of those years in the Guard of those 11 were full time. And so flew F-16s my whole career, and it was amazing. 3 combat deployments. As it relates to Israel, flown over Israel. I've seen it from the air in Syria, in Western Syria, looking at Mount Hermon, and then actually had an opportunity to visit in 2024. 23, just a few months before October 7th, actually, in summer of 23. But in any case, we were very involved in our local church here in Auburn, and started getting more and more involved, and then eventually got invited to work in our college's ministry school that's up in Birmingham. And that was a move of God and all kinds of details there that I could get into. But even prior to that, had a stirring that, okay, God's got something more for me. And as I have shared with you before, was all in with my career in the Air Force and felt like God was using me in a great capacity there. And he blessed me, and I give him all the glory, but rose to the rank of Brigadier General, as you pointed out. And there's a big story behind that even. But then his heart, he just started to change my heart and to think about more eternal things. And the way I like to describe it, not to be, graphic or sensational, but was focused on killing people and in the military, and that's what you are, right? Mm-hmm. You're a professional killer. But he just started to shift my heart to saving people and thinking about things through more of an eternal lens. And so he opened doors that no man can shut and shut doors no man can open. Got invited to be on the executive team at our college and did that for about 2.5 years and then pivoted over to the church side. So I'm actually working for our church now. And again, big pivot from military to ministry, but that's the overview on how it happened.
So for you as a fighter pilot, and we specifically didn't do too much prep for this conversation because I wanted this to be raw.
Yeah.
Like, do you have, over the years, do you have theology on your mind at all when it comes to all the stuff that we are involved in as a country and you have been involved in personally as a fighter pilot in the Middle East?
Somewhat. I just feel like God has ordered my steps, and I think he's used me to do his work, his bidding, even on the battlefield. The verse, I think it's in Psalms, that he trains my fingers for battle and my hands for war. And I did feel that there were weapons that I was releasing and guiding in with a laser or, releasing a GPS guided weapon going against some evil people on the ground, ISIS or, in Syria or, the Taliban, Al Qaeda, whomever in Afghanistan, and would be praying the bomb, about a 30-second time of fall for the weapon and be praying it all the way to impact. And so, not that I wasn't getting too carried away with the theology of it, but I felt like God was using me in that capacity to do his bidding. And that's about the extent of it, I'd say, as far as how much I thought about it from a theological standpoint.
But just maybe more in terms of good over evil.
Yes. Yeah. That's an interesting question. I was actually, there's a young man I'm mentoring, and he was interested in the Air Force, and we were talking through that. And he'd ask me stories and get me talking about war stories. And I realized I would frame it in the good guys and the bad guys. Well, the bad guys did this, and we took out these bad guys, da da da. And he stopped me after a while. And this is after many meetings with him, spending a lot of time with him. And he said it in all respect. He goes, "Hey, with all respect and humility," I'm paraphrasing, but he said, "How do you know that, they were the bad guys and we're the good guys?" And I was like, "Whoa, okay." I think there's, but to answer that question, I do feel that America is certainly not perfect. But I do feel, and we make mistakes, but I felt like, we were doing good work for America, and from an eternal standpoint, again, we see lots of people in the Bible that God used in kind of a military capacity, David probably being my favorite, where they did a lot of, warfare, and they killed a lot of people, but it was in the service of the Lord. And but that is an interesting question, mm-hmm. The good versus evil thing. So not sure if I answered it, but
I think that's kind of what we're talking about with this topic, Israel and the Church. And by the way, for our listeners, I'll put a link to the series below. So we've, in this series, there's great articles for information about this, but also podcasts to go along with it. We've talked about how your theology impacts your view of Israel. We've talked about dispensationalism and covenant theology, kind of the two main options for Christians today. And I think a lot of Christians today, at least, don't even fully understand. They might not even know the terms a lot of times, but they find themselves categorizing Israel as the good guy, right?
Right.
And so I think the reason, there's a couple of reasons for that. I would say that culturally, a reason for that is we Christians relate more to the Jewish nation in terms of values, right? As opposed to the Muslim nations. But that's not really what we're talking about theologically, because theologically we're talking about this idea, a dispensationalist idea, that God's promises to Israel from Genesis 12, God's promises to Abraham that eventually, would be claimed as promises to Israel, that you'd have a people and a land, and this promised land in particular, that those promises are still to Israel, right? So basically, let me just summarize for people who haven't heard the podcast or don't know the term. So a dispensationalist would say, a Christian dispensationalist would say, that Israel and Christianity are on two separate tracks. And so God made this promises to Israel thousands of years ago to Abraham and to his descendants, and those promises are still in view. And then when the church age began, would be a different dispensation altogether, the promises to the church are kind of on a separate track. So a dispensationalist would say, God is still going to fulfill his promises to Israel, whereas someone who believes in covenant theology, they would say, no, I think that the church now is a fulfillment of the people of God. And so there's only one people of God, the church, and any Jewish people who are Christians, Messianic Jews, for example, so they would be a part of the promises. And so a covenant theologian would say, there's not two separate tracks. Israel doesn't have this special thing. They're not God's chosen people anymore, because all of that has been fulfilled in the church. Pinto, how did I do explaining that, number one? And then number two, where do you stand on that as a Christian, and even just how have you thought about that, if you ever did, as a fighter pilot?
Yeah, well, I think you did great. And I'm not a theologian, and I'll stay in my lane in terms of, I'm probably a military guy first, and a guy in ministry second, in terms of my life experience. But Yeah, and I'm still learning. I'm trying to figure out what I am, and I have a foot in both camps a little bit. I do, you know, covenant theology, I think, is pretty clear. But then but if you look at all the promises that God made to the nation of Israel throughout the Bible, where they are His chosen people. He has a heart for the place of Israel. And again, I was there and kind of felt it spiritually. And the people and the nation. I don't see a reading. I don't see anywhere in the Bible where he breaks those promises or kind of goes back on, what he has promised, his love for Israel. And I don't, in one way I'm thinking, do we need to put God in a box and say it's one or the other? But I do see though the promises that he's made, and even, I'm looking at Romans 9, 10, 11, where Paul kind of grapples with some of this, and Romans 11, verse 29, for God's gifts and his call are irrevocable. And he says that in the context of talking about Israel and Zion and Jacob in the verses that precede it. So I think, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So I do believe that everyone has to have a relationship with Jesus, a personal relationship, give their lives to him as their Lord and Savior in order to be saved. However, I don't think there's a separate track where Israel gets a pass because they're his chosen people. But I do believe that he has made promises to Israel, and he's going to use them for his glory and to show his might and his hand, and use the nation of Israel in a special way that he may not use other nations. So that's how I would answer it from my poor attempt at theology.
You're saying even still today that God wants to use the Jews in a special way.
I believe it. I do. And even today, if you look at just kind of geopolitics today, you start with 1948, the fact that, promises that were made in Deuteronomy and Ezekiel and Isaiah about, the nation of Israel who would be scattered and then brought back to their own land. And that happened. The fact that a people group were scattered, living all over the place, didn't have a place of their own, from a geography standpoint. And then in 1948, the modern nation state of Israel was established. That's a miracle in and of itself. And then the favor you see that this tiny country is the size of New Jersey, the all the different wars they've been through, there just seems to be this hand on them that is inexplicable in my view. And even with the most recent conflict, all of the missiles, the hundreds if not thousands of missiles at this point that Iran has sent towards Israel, and yes, they are well prepared and they have bunkers and, they're very well organized in terms of how they defend their and capabilities, how they defend their homeland. But the damage and the loss of life has been pretty minimal. And I just think there's a supernatural favor on them. And I do see in how geopolitically things are aligning in the world. And if you look at, Ezekiel 38, 39, Gog, Magog, war, all of that, we can get into that. How nations are aligning with each other and against Israel, it just seems like prophecy is unfolding and Israel's at the center of it. So that's how I see that.
Okay, so let me push back. Well, not push back, but let me ask you to put your general hat on.
Okay.
Would all the stuff you just said about Israel's dominance and favor, would that be true if America wasn't involved?
We're highly involved and we certainly, we sell them all of our best technology, maybe not all of it, but most of it. We have a partnership that's gone back, many, many decades since their founding. I think there has been a special relationship. So the question is, would they survive without us?
Yeah, because you just said again, that it's miraculous. And I'm just trying to, I'm going to be the skeptic here, okay?
Sure.
I'm going to be maybe somebody who's not a Christian, or even someone who believes in covenant theology, okay? But let's just say the skeptic who's not a Christian, they're listening to this podcast. They would say, how would you call that miraculous? That's just the American nation since 1948 coming to their aid. So it's not Israel's amazing ability. It's the fact that they've got us in their corner. Is that short-sighted or is that a legitimate response to that?
Well, I think it's true in that they have us in their corner. But I would argue that until this conflict, when we have American boots on the ground in Israel, we're using their bases, we're staging, you know, aircraft, we've got integrated air defense systems, our Patriot missile batteries are integrated into their, you know, Iron Dome systems. Until this conflict, they've been doing it on their own, but with our hardware, our technology. So we haven't directly intervened for them. They've been on their own, you know, but they've been using, you know, all the best fighter jets and missiles and everything else that we've sold them, but they've had to do the fighting on their own. You know, the IDF has been doing it against an alliance of you know, Arab nations all around them that hate them. And we haven't directly helped them out. Now, indirectly through intelligence sharing and you know, weapons and all that we have, but so that's a tough question. I don't think we've done as much for them directly as maybe we are now, but and even that, you know, we're not, they're doing the heavy lifting on their own. Yes, we're partnered with them, but it's, you know, they have their agenda, we have ours, and they're right now they've aligned with respect to what's going on with Iran.
And that's, speaking of agendas, I think that's one of the potential pushbacks is someone could say, again, a non-Christian could just say, why are we supporting Israel so much? And I think you could make an argument, if you just take the Bible out of it, is we need a proxy in the region. We need someone to stay the hand of the Islamic State. And so kind of like the argument you might make for Ukraine, supporting Ukraine against Russia,
right,
is if we don't do that, it's only going to get worse for Europe. And so I could see an argument being, just stick with me here, I can see an argument being, from a secular politician's point of view, let's see, what can I use here? What can I use here to make sure that we support Israel? And they find out about dispensationalism, which has only been around for 150 years, theologically. I mean, longer than that, but really, like, dispensationalism took root in America, in Baptist churches in the South in particular. Like, this is all stuff that is fairly new. And I could, if I'm going to be a skeptic, I could imagine that a secular politician would say, this would be very useful for me. If I could get the right behind me, the Christian, the conservative movement behind me. And you see this today on YouTube, you see people get, I'm going to get all kinds of comments on this podcast, I'm sure, because people get super fired up about this. Because they look at, Christians will look at their Bible, and Christian Zionists in particular, we did an episode on this. Christian Zionists are like, this is like the core of their belief. Like, this is what fills your feed all day long. And so pretty soon you start reading scripture through this lens, and then this becomes the main thing for you. So again, I could see a secular politician saying, let's go ahead and use this. And you can make an argument that throughout history for the last 150 years, the Zionist movement has been used by non-Christian politicians to promote their agenda in the Middle East.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that. You know, I guess the secular viewpoint, without bringing the Bible into it, is, you know, they're a functioning democracy in the Middle East that are aligned with us, I think, from a value standpoint. And you know, whereas all the countries that surround them are Arab, are predominantly Muslim countries. Sharia law is big. You know, there's some monarchies and whatnot in there, but you really don't have democracies. You know, you could argue maybe that Iraq is loosely, but at this point, but you don't have a country that is, I think, as aligned with us on the world stage in that region. Maybe as Israel. Now, again, there's some progressive, I say that from an economic standpoint and everything else, but like UAE, they're, you know, we've got a great relationship with UAE, even Saudi Arabia now, you know, good economic ties. And, you know, I think they generally want peace and stability in the region. Jordan, we've got a good relationship with them. So there are some good allies that we have, and we have bases in those countries. In fact, we're prosecuting attacks from, you know, in the war right now from some of those countries. In fact, that's why Iran is shooting at those countries, because we have partnerships with them.
Right.
But I do think, you know, we want to promote democracy. We want to promote freedom. We want to promote liberty. And I think Israel, in that region, Israel represents that probably better than any other country around them.
But it's because we put them there. Do you see the argument from the skeptic? The skeptic would say they weren't there until the restorationist movement, until this Zionist movement that, I mean, all, if you look at the Balfour Declaration and you look at all the, you know, Europe pushing, I mean, it goes all the way back to the Puritans in the 1600s. They're reading their Bibles and they're seeing this stuff in Revelation. I'm not trying to take away from the dispensationalist argument. I'm just trying to zoom back and help people understand.
Yeah.
If you're a dispensationalist, you are like cheering on what happened in 1948. You're more than cheering it on. You're voting for it. You're making sure, you're pushing for it. And even before that, so that there would be a restoration of the Jews to Palestine, because you're reading the Bible and you're saying, God promised this in Genesis 12. This is their land. God said, this is your land. And so the Puritans started seeing this and saying, we should restore the Jews to Palestine, because they weren't there. For the longest time, it was part of the Ottoman Empire. It wasn't, the Jews weren't there, but the Western world started reading scripture like this and saying, we need to start pushing for this. And that's the Zionist movement, is saying, we want to get Jews back in the Middle East because this is their land. And so this is, I think, where so much, I really try to argue from the other person's perspective. I'm putting my secular hat on and I'm saying, wait, the Western world put the Jews and displaced people who would live there for 500 years. And the Christian says, the Zionist says that, well, yes, because this was God promised this 3,000 years ago. To the people. And so the reason there's a democracy, the reason there's a Judeo-Christian ethic in the Middle East is because the Zionist movement, I mean, this would be an argument, is because the Zionist movement put them there. So for dispensationalists, you say, yeah, and that's how we should be doing it. But for someone who comes from a covenant theology perspective, they would say, well, that's not really how I read my Bible. It's not that I'm against Israel. It's just that's not how I read my Bible. And so I guess my question for you is, do you ever see in the upper, you don't have to give names, but in the upper echelon, do you ever see the dispensationalist or Zionist viewpoint represented around some of those tables? Or is this just sort of baked into it at this point?
I think it's baked into it. I think you know, those that are maybe Christian Zionists, you know who they are. You know, Mike Huckabee, he's right now the ambassador to Israel, and I'm a fan of his, and he makes a pretty articulate, you know, case and unapologetic for being a Christian Zionist. But in terms of you know, in my experience, when making just studying how we made policy specifically that affected the military, I didn't necessarily see it. Pointing back to Israel so strongly like that. Now, again, I retired 2 years ago from the military. None of this stuff with Gaza and the October 7th. I think that's changed. That's been an inflection point. I really do believe that, and I think that's changed the narrative a little bit. But prior to that, I didn't see a real Zionist influence in our policymaking decisions. But again, that was my limited viewpoint. You know, I was a one star, but you know, that doesn't mean much in our military and certainly not in political circles. But I did have, you know, for instance, worked at the Pentagon for about 2 years. And my second job there, I was the Iraq country director. So after, you know, we defeated Iraq in that war militarily, and you know, Saddam was taken out of power and all that, we essentially were rebuilding the Iraqi military. So I was at the Pentagon, and any foreign military sales that flowed to Iraq came through my office. So I went in and out of Iraq frequently, meeting with their Ministry of Defense, meeting with their, you know, their Air Force staff, their different leaders in their nation. Not the Prime Minister, but you know, we were supporting Iraq. And there's again, at that time they were trying to get their act together as a democracy. But we wanted to rebuild their military to help them, you know, get stable and all that. Now, did Israel like that? Absolutely not. They didn't like it. You know, but I went to meetings with at the State Department in DC. And, you know, again, when I'm in the cheap seats for some of these conversations, I was a lieutenant colonel back then, but, decisions that if you would say, okay, we're being, you know, very influenced from a Zionist viewpoint, we wouldn't have made, but we did make them. We sold them F-16s, we sold them C-130s, we sold them all kinds of different, you know, different weapon systems and surveillance systems. Our special ops teams are working with their special ops teams to try to rebuild their capacity as a military. So, again, did the Israelis like it? No, they didn't. Here's a funny little quick story. So when we were selling them the F-16, before they made a decision on it, they have F-16s now. There's two different types of targeting pods. One is a Lockheed Martin sniper pod, and one is called a Lightning pod. And Lightning, one of the partners that produces the Lightning is an Israeli company. And so we realized this, and we were briefing the Iraqis on the different types of pods that they can use. Northrop Grumman was partnered with, I think it's Rafael, that is the company, the Israeli company that helps them make this Lightning pod. And the Israelis had an objection to us offering that to the Iraqis.
Wow.
And so when we had initially rolled out, hey, you can get this pod or that pod, the Israelis had an objection to that. And so we had to almost walk that offer back in and say, well, I'm so sorry, we can't offer this pod to you because Northrop Grumman's business partner says they're not going to do it. So, I was the guy, as a lieutenant colonel, I had to brief their air chief, General Anwar was his name, and deliver the news. And they nominated me to break that news to them. And I didn't know how that was going to go, and said, sir, I'm so sorry, but we're no longer going to be able to offer this pod. And they kind of, he looked at me and he was quiet. And by the way, this guy looked just like Saddam Hussein, and Saddam was dead at this point, but looked at me, big mustache and all that. And a bunch of Iraqi generals along this big long table. And he's just kind of, they're all waiting for him to, what he's going to say. And he says, we don't want this pod. If the Israelis have touched this pod, we don't want it. So we want the Lockheed Martin sniper pod, and then all the generals kind of nodded their heads. So, but the point is, yeah, there's tension in that region. And, and because it had a connection to Israel, they didn't want it. And, but again, we were working with the Iraqi military. We weren't preventing them from getting certain capabilities just because of Israel's stance or maybe some Zionist position.
So the motivator from your vantage point was more about pro-democracy in the region.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's such
an
interesting.
And stability overall.
Yeah. And stability overall. It's a good point. Cause I do feel like it's so interesting. There's so much more I think to talk about on this topic. In fact, I'd like to have you back because I wanted two things I want to talk about. Maybe we'll save this for next time. Okay. I want to talk about how a Lebanese Christian views what's going on in the world right now. Mm. As Israel is bombing Lebanon.
Yeah.
Of course, Hezbollah and it's the good guy, bad guy thing. I just wonder how a Lebanese Christian thinks about it when they're caught in the crosshairs of that. That they feel like Israel is supporting, or America, Christian America is supporting Israel, especially if they're caught wind of dispensationalism or Christian Zionism. And they're like, but wait a second, we're the Christians here. Why are Christians not supporting Christians? I don't know if this is true, but I would feel like if I was a Lebanese Christian or an Iranian Christian, I might be thinking, why is somebody in America not speaking up for the Christians here, like American Christians do for in Africa when there's genocide in Africa, in Nigeria for Christians? Like, we speak up about that, and I don't feel like I've ever really heard American Christians speak up about Christians in the Middle East, because I think theologically, whether they even realize it, I think they're just thinking about, we need to support Israel. Mm. And I just, well, I need to remind everyone that Jewish people are not Christians. Now, again, that's not an anti-Semitic thing at all. I'm just, I'm stating a fact. They don't believe Jesus is the Messiah. And so that's just such an interesting little element when I compare how we're supporting Christians in Africa and then the lack of support of Christians in the Middle East.
That's a very valid point. And we don't have time to unpack this story, but when I went to Israel in 2023, we did take a day and we went into the you know, Judea and Samaria. We went into the West Bank, which is Palestinian controlled territory. We had to go in with a Palestinian guide, and he was a Christian, Palestinian Christian. Mm. And he showed us, you know, the, all the different things you would see in Bethlehem, which is in the is in Judea and Samaria. It is in the West Bank in Palestinian controlled land. He was great. He was an amazing guy. And we wound up doing two serve projects where we, these Palestinian Christians, so you've got the Palestinians who are having a tough time. And then within that community, you've got Christians, and they're even further marginalized because nobody supports them. Their businesses have a hard time surviving, all that. So we bought a month. There were two different families. We bought a month's worth of food and went in and delivered the food to these families and prayed with them. But then we went to their church afterwards, and it was kind of a group of elders in this this church in Bethlehem, this Palestinian Christian church. And we were all, you know, in line and talking about, you know, Jesus and we love the Lord, and we're all going to heaven, right? On the same team. But one of the elders asked, "Where are you staying?" And I said, "Well, we're staying at this place inside the old city in Jerusalem." And his whole demeanor changed. Mm. And he started, in broken English, started going off on Israel in a pretty ugly way. And he was sort of, maybe not the senior guy in the room. The senior guy in the room said something to him in Arabic that basically was like, "Hey, shut your mouth." And then he zipped it, and then we continued on with, you know, having literally nice, you know, tea and biscuits and having the cordial conversation. But there's absolutely tension there. And then we heard that come out a little bit more with our tour guide. We actually went into a refugee camp inside that area, a Palestinian refugee camp, and saw some things that, you know, most Americans don't get to see. So it was a different perspective for sure, to your point.
Well, I think we'll leave it right there, General Ed Casey. This is so fascinating. I'm going to have you back. And for those who are listening, I encourage you to check out the series called Israel in the Church. You can find it at pursuegod.org and do some of your own research. Figure out what you think about dispensationalism and Zionism and covenant theology and all that stuff. Until next time, thanks.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.